Good morning.
Good morning.
We have celebrity in the dog pound. We have visitors, and we have visitors from afar. Where did you say?
Romania,
folks. We can't give tickets away in Smyrna. Unbelievable. We're going to write some stuff on the board today. You ever watch on TV when the guy's got the thing in his ear and you could tell he's listening, but he's also trying to talk to the audience? I don't know how they do that. I have enough trouble keeping up with one thing. But when I've listened to myself, I've thought, those people on the internet can't see what we're doing, or if I'm writing a word, they don't know the word. So I have to think about that today, if I'm writing a word or whatever. Jim always says one of the things he loves about our church is that he has a lot of latitude. And by that, I think he means you guys are a great audience and you've been well trained and you're very tolerant of hearing the gospel. And that's really good, because if this was a room full of strangers, I would have been approaching this with great trepidation. Anytime you talk about God's grace, you by necessity have to talk about man's dilemma. The dilemma of being a man of mankind. So we're familiar with the biblical position about mankind. We want to talk today a little bit about, once again, about depravity and about some of the implications of it theologically and kind of practically. The story in the Bible about man's nature is not a good story. It's kind of like a Greek tragedy. A lot of preachers seem to find a good story in it, but really, the good story is only if you are saved by God's grace. Otherwise, there's really not much to commend us as human beings. We're going to get started in Genesis, chapter 3. I always assume everybody knows, but y'all are familiar with this tulip thing. And what does the T stand for?
Total depravity.
Okay, what does that mean? Someone tell me. We'll edit it out if you say something silly. Don't worry. That's what relaxes me up here, believe me.
Hopelessly dead in sin.
Hopelessly dead. Any chance we can work it out with dead. God?
Dead.
That's pretty negative, Tom.
Dead.
This church is not about up with people. I read something pretty profound the other day, and it really wasn't about this topic, but you ever suspect something's going on and it makes you very nervous? And then when you find out for sure it's going on, you stop feeling nervous. You might get irritated, but you stop feeling that nervous feeling. Well, if you've always suspected something's wrong with you, you're right. There's something really wrong with you. There's something really wrong with us. And if you've suspected it, it's kind of creepy. But if you find out for sure, then you can kind of relax. Okay? So what I want to point out today is that, and I've said it before, and Jim, I know, has said it 1,000 times. If you don't understand man's nature, if you don't understand what the Bible teaches about our depravity, then you really understand very little in the Bible. You really don't understand salvation. You really don't understand the work of Christ. You really don't understand God's grace. You really don't understand Israel. You really don't understand what's going to happen in the future. So other than that, you're in good shape. All right, let's see how this all starts. And sadly, it starts with a woman. Genesis 3. 1 through 6. And now we're going to start actually with the serpent. Now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said to the woman, "Has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden?" You remember back a chapter or so, God explained very clearly, you have all this. All you got to do is tend to the garden. You got it made. All you've got to do is don't eat of this one tree. In the day you do that, you'll die. That's pretty simple, right? So right away, the line is drawn between obeying God and not obeying God. Let's see what happens. So Satan says, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, we may eat the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. Then the serpent said to the woman, you will not surely die, because God knows that in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. What's wrong with that? I'll tell you what's wrong with that.
It's a lie.
Yeah, it's a lie. Just to illustrate, here's God, and then under God is us, okay? Satan is saying something very interesting. He says, God knows in the day you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you'll be like him. Now, this enticed her, and it said, when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and a tree desirable to make one wise, she took of its fruit. So instead of just obeying God, she then became a judge over God of God's intention and what he really meant. And, well, he said this because of this. So therefore, in other words, she put herself over God. That's how easily we fall. It's that simple. Now think about it. All this discussion about free will, which, by the way, Jim and I settled this years ago. We actually did talk about this on the internet. Whatever you think about free will or not, you have to think Adam and Eve probably had the freest of free wills, okay? So the first time she has a conversation with anyone that tempts her, she fails. The very first time she chooses her judgment over what God said. This decision she made, this thinking process she was going through, is kind of the core of our rebellious nature. From childhood on, we want to make up our own minds and make up our own rules about our lives. We don't like people telling us what to do. We don't like our parents telling us what to do when we're little. The serpent understood this about us because it's exactly what his makeup is. It's what he is. So he fully understood that people are like that. By the way, this is, well, I'm going to say, we see this throughout the media, we see it in books, we see it in movies, we see it everywhere. The notion that if people have all the information, they can make a correct choice. Now, this might work in some areas, but it really doesn't work in the area of morals. By the way, this is an underlying premise in the whole idea of free will and Arminianism, that if you give people the facts, they will choose God. This is completely false. This is completely wrong. So the theme here is that obeying God is not necessarily what's best for me. I must decide what is best for me. I must decide of my own free will what is best for me. And now I know God said that, but still I have to decide. What seems right, here's the common denominator, me, me, me. That's a theme in human history. It's the downfall of man. So we want to decide what seems right. Turn over to Proverbs 16. Proverbs 16, 25. There is a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. So how did it work out for Eve and Adam to partake? Did their life get better?
No.
Was the implied promise that the serpent gave, did things work out? No. The immediate response was shame and guilt. And then the other things that started happening were horrendous. Right away, things get bad. Their son murders their other son. Right away, this starts happening. By Genesis chapter 6, turn over to that. I mean, we're literally a few years, I don't even know how long, into man's existence on earth. And this is how badly things have degenerated. Verse 5, chapter 6, the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. I want you to really look at that. Look at the grammar of that statement. Look at the adjectives. You can't pack in one sentence much worse than you could possibly say about people. The wickedness of man was great. Every intent of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. Is there anything I could say worse than that? That is terrible. And then God said, okay, now I'm going to drown everybody. I mean, this is bad. This is bad right away, how bad it gets. So it wasn't like man had to evolve. It's not like we're so much worse now than we were. We were bad right from the very beginning. Terrible. Turn over to Jeremiah 17, or just listen. This is kind of a position statement by God about the state of man. Jeremiah 17, verse 9. Now, Jeremiah, how long did he preach?
31 years.
Yeah. How many converts?
Zero.
Boy, compared to that, we've got a mega church. Look at this. Zero converts in 31 years. Was there something wrong with his message? It didn't tickle the ears. Here's God's kind of a summation point about man's nature. The heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Who can know it is a rhetorical statement. In other words, man can't know it. A man cannot understand his own heart. Cannot. Apart from God's instruction and God's grace in understanding that instruction, we cannot understand ourselves. Tom, I want you to hold that spot for later. I don't know if you've noticed, but the world doesn't like this, doesn't even like where I'm going with this. I've already, if anyone came on this, they're going to tune this out. The world doesn't want to believe this. I don't think even we want to believe this sometimes. I don't think we want to believe this about ourselves. The world does not want to support this. The world says things like, follow your heart. Your heart will lead you down the right way. It says that. You hear that all the time, don't you? We may have said that. I probably have said that. I probably said that in the last few years. I want to go back to something we hit on before. Do you remember that tree I made on the board? Those of you who were here, it was a memorable thing. Those are roots, okay? I'm not good at drawing. And here, oops, okay. We don't have green leaves today. All right. This is the leaves, and these things, we're going to call them fruit, okay? Remember we talked about this? Somebody say, yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to call that fruit the abortion fruit. And we'll call this one the adultery fruit. And this one, lying. And this one, no school prayer. Now, are all these important? Yes. They're all important. And you can find people that will agree with you on calling these things bad things. Adultery's wrong. Lying's wrong. Abortion's wrong. No school prayer. So this is the fruit in the tree. Now, if we want to destroy this tree, remember we talked about it? We could do different things. If we shoot at the fruit and let's say kill all the... Let's say we kill all the abortion fruit. That would be a good thing, right? Right. Does that kill the tree?
No.
No. What's holding the tree up?
The roots.
The roots. And what are the roots? I'm going to tell you what the roots are. Unbelief and the condition of man's heart. Those are inextricably tied together. It is what's going on in our hearts that produces this tree. This stuff didn't happen out of nowhere. This stuff is a natural outgrowth of the human condition. And it was obviously very bad by Genesis 6, so bad God destroyed the world. So it's not like, you know, this is some new thing. There's nothing new under the sun. Man has not come up with any new evil. Man's heart is the problem and our unbelief. This is what would have to change for the tree to get eradicated. Okay? I brought up this guy last time when I was preaching, and I don't know how this happened, but a bunch of people at work ended up listening to my message, some of whom are all about these new marriage laws, some of whom are just all about what's in this tree, okay? And I thought, oh, this is getting interesting. And this one guy said, well, Alex, he goes to church, but he doesn't, he thinks it's okay about the gay marriage thing. And he said to me the other day, you made me sound like a wimp in your message. I said, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to make you sound like a wimp. I meant to make you sound incorrect. But he said, well, Alex, we agree on abortion, and we agree that all these other things are wrong, so we're almost in total agreement. And I said, you know, if we agreed on all of that and we don't agree on what's wrong with the root system, we don't agree at all. If you just happen to fall on the side of, I mean, there's all sorts of crusaders for children's rights that are hell-bent. There's all sorts of people that would agree with you about these things that do not have the right belief system, and their heart is in a big mess. So I said to him, you and I really don't agree on anything. We may happen to agree that abortion's wrong, because he said, I really like what you said about abortion. And that's where I think we think that we can join in with the world and, you know, well, we're in agreement here, you know, and we have inaugurations with different religions praying. And I'm like, wait a minute, what are we doing? You guys are familiar with that. If someone does not agree with you about your belief system as taught here, let's say, or in the Bible, I should say, and the condition of their heart is unsaved, they don't agree with you about anything, really. They don't agree with you. They don't have a knowledge base. They don't agree on how you arrive at truth. You're not in agreement. It just seems like you are. It's a fundamentally mutually exclusive belief system problem. So the condition of man's heart is directly involved with what's wrong with the way man believes. The world is in rebellion to God, and that's why they cannot believe. Turn over to Genesis 8. To further drive the point. Chapter 8, verse 21. We're going to start around the middle. It's funny. It says, the Lord said in his heart, now that you can put your faith in. The Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground for man's sake. This is after the flood. Although the, quote, imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. This isn't the easiest thing to swallow. You know, we love children. How many times have you said, well, the children are so innocent? And in some ways, they are very innocent. They're very naive. But we're not talking about knowledge and sophistication. We're talking about their essence. I brought a picture of Anna when she was little. It's really cute. She was my little darling. Here, pass it around. Y'all look at it. I'm very proud of my children. I love my children. But I want to tell you a story that drove this point home. Anna was 2 years old and 4 months when Josiah came along. Now, I'm going to tell you, Josiah really was a good kid. I mean, by any human standard. I don't remember we ever put him in time out, let alone spanked him. He just was very compliant. He never gave us any trouble. Now, notice I didn't say that about Anna. I said that about Josiah. Well, I have a picture somewhere. I really wanted to bring it in. But the day after Josiah was born, I wish y'all could see this. He's sitting in his mother's lap. One of the safest places to be, if a mother truly wants her child, is to be in her lap. And Anna was like a few feet away. And I'm standing there watching Anna, and it was really funny. Remember, we're talking about depravity. And it was like I'm watching her, and I'm seeing it in slow motion, that something bad is about to happen. And I don't even know if I could do the face, but it was kind of like she was sort of excited and knew she should be, but she was also sort of repulsed. And she's looking at him, and I promise you, her face took on like a reptilian look. And all of a sudden, it happened. She lashed out at him and scratched his face. I'm like, what in the world? And he's sitting there with his little face cut. And she's like, you know, And I'm like, wow, you know, this is amazing. She's 2 years old and 4 months, and that's really pretty awful. And how many times have we heard Jim say, you don't have to teach children to be bad. You have to teach them to be good. I mean, human nature on full display. I mean, she loves her brother. Look, they're sitting together. He doesn't even have a scratch mark on him. Plastic surgery, we fixed it. Well, anyway, so it can sort of be cute in a way, like when your cat's trying to kill you. But the fallenness of man and the fallenness of the earth is a serious thing. We're kind of in, we're kind of in denial about people and their nature. You hear it all the time. You hear, well, he would never do that. That's out of character. Well, maybe you don't know about anyone doing something like that. And maybe the person wouldn't ever do that. But never say never when it comes to human nature. Never. Just as, this is kind of an aside. Have you all ever heard of Walker Percy?
Yeah.
Well, this guy was a great, great American author of the 20th century. And he wrote a book that, if you want to check something out, that's really funny. And it's really about the self, how strange we are. It's called Lost in the Cosmos, the last self-help book. It's got like 20 alternate titles. One of the alternate titles, The Strange Case of the Self, Yourself, the Self That Haunts the Universe. One of the titles is Despite All the Bizarre Things That Exist in the Universe, Quasars, Novas, Pulsars, You Are Beyond Doubt the Strangest Thing. You know, it's funny because he's kind of right. I mean, and in some ways, man is like the only alien creature in the universe. I mean, I don't really think a cat sits around and contemplates its existence. But we do that. And we have a self. And that's tied into the fact that we have morals and we can make choices. And we're twisted. And so he kind of touches on that. It's a fascinating read. But you hear this all the time. Well, you know, and I understand what it means. I might even say it. Well, you know, she's a good guy. I'm sorry. He's a good guy. Well, nowadays you might say she's a good guy. He's a good guy, you know. And I mean that. And by that, I mean, I know what he's like. I know his family life to some extent, blah, blah, blah. But do you remember how Jesus responded to that? Good teacher. What'd he say?
No one's good except God.
Why do you call me good? In other words, you don't even know me. As far as you know, I'm just a man, and I got news for you. If I'm just a man, I'm not good either. You know, Jesus talked in these absolute terms. We have people that actually trust people, trust them more than they should. Have you ever noticed the more emotionally, the closer your emotional proximity, the more difficult it is to see? I've noticed that. I see it all the time. I've seen it in myself. I see it in other people. Once they have an emotional investment in something, it's difficult for them to see facts. They don't want to see the facts. They want to believe what they want to believe. This is how we are. So this is true about other people. It's true about the people in the Bible. It's true about ourselves. Turn over to Ephesians chapter 2. Now we're going to get to the technical portion of our message. Language is very important. I wanted to tell you there's a reason God picked the Greek language to write the New Testament in. It wasn't arbitrary. It wasn't like, you know, well, I'm going to just pick Greek. I might as well. I picked it out of a hat. No. Greek is actually a very specific language. The grammar and such, you can really make a point. Whereas in English, you can read the sentence and it can be a little ambiguous. Okay, Ephesians chapter 2. The point we're trying to drive is that this is true about ourselves. And I know you all know that. But I don't think we can get this too well. And I don't think you can deny the implications and ramifications of believing this. And how pointless it is, if the tulip thing was still up there, to try to explain election to people, perseverance of the saints, grace. You cannot explain grace to people if they don't get this about themselves. They can't get it. And it's just our nature. We're going to try to give ourselves credit or bargain or do whatever. Okay, Ephesians chapter 2. We're going to read the first three verses. And you, talking to believers, he made alive, who were, as Tom said, dead in trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience. Who's that?
Man.
Well, he's kind of drawing a distinction, yeah, but he's saying you now, he's that spirit that you once were captive to, you once walked according to the course of the world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience. That's the goats. Among whom also we all once conducted ourselves in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desire of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as the others. That's very important, because I have heard some crazy theories. We were by nature children of wrath. Get that. We were by nature children of wrath, just as the others. Who are the others? The real children of wrath, the ones that are not going to be saved. No different. No different. We're just as they are. But we're saved. But if you don't understand that we're just like them, you're playing a mind game with yourself. Verse 4. But God, who is rich in mercy because of his great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in trespasses, made us alive with Christ. Dead in trespass. That's the word we get the concept of total from. Okay, I want to look at the word depravity now. And we're going to look at Romans chapter 1, verse 28. Somebody read Romans 1, 28. Maybe I should turn to it.
And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not convenient.
It says God gave them over to a reprobate mind. Anybody have a different word there?
Debased.
Depraved. Those are the three words. Let's look at that a second. Depraved. They all mean the same thing, by the way. Debased. And reprobate. Okay? That all means the same thing. You ever hear a word your whole life and then you go, well, what does that really mean? Like, if you're going to define it, you just go, well, I don't know, but I know it's bad. It is bad. I want to explain to you where this word comes from. I'm going to write it in English. Dokimazo. That word means to test, try, examine. Tom, get ready. Tom goes, for what? Prove, discern. You're saying, well, what has that got to do with this? Hang on. Dokimazo, to test, to try, to examine, to prove, to discern. Do you remember Jim has talked about when you put an A or an alpha in front of a word in Greek? Do you remember what he said happens to the word?
Right.
So guess what that means? That means failing the test. Failing the test, rejected, cast away. Okay, so this stuff goes to this word, and when you add the A in front of it, it becomes failing the test, rejected, cast away. It says God gave them over to a debased mind, to a reprobate mind, depraved mind. Now, we're going to see two other examples of him using this word. Somebody turn to 2 Timothy 3:8, and someone turn to Titus 1:16. Because we're going to get done. We have things to do. Now, as Jannes and Jambres resisted Moses, Just as they resisted Moses, so do these also resist the truth. Men of corrupt minds, disapproved according to the faith. Same Greek word, disapproved. Failing the test, rejected, cast away. That's another way of saying the same word. Titus 1:16, a few pages. Okay, hit it.
They claim to know God, but by their actions they deny him. They are detestable, disobedient, and unfit for doing anything good.
Okay, unfit is the word, again, for adokimazo. Unfit. Doesn't fit. Rejected. It fails the test. It doesn't measure up. That's the word God uses about us. Tom, remember we were looking at Jeremiah 17? Look at verse 10.
I, the Lord, search the heart and test the mind to give every man according to his ways, according to the fruit of his deeds.
In the earlier part of that verse, it said that the heart is sick, the heart's dysfunctional. Who can understand it? The rejoinder is God says, I test it. I try it. I test the mind. I test the heart. And what is the result of God's test when he tests man? That is the Greek word that is used by Paul that we fail the test. We are rejectable. We are castaways. That is the condition of man. God does the testing. It is God's standard that we're talking about. It's not how we feel about each other. That doesn't matter. So God's the one that tests. He searches the hearts. He tests us. He searches our minds. The result, adokimos. Sounds like a Japanese restaurant, but it's not. Adokimos, that's the noun form. Adokimazo, that means that's the verb form. God is the one testing. He's the one failing us. That's the only teacher that counts. All of us are in this boat. We all fail and fall short of God's glory. So, if we understand total depravity, we can then understand how we get saved. If you understand this, if you don't agree with this, I want you to think about it. Now, there's two more words we're going to learn. Romans 4, it's actually a quote from the Old Testament. Romans 4, 1 through 4. We've set the stage now. We all fail the test. It's hopeless. As far as we're concerned, it's hopeless. We're not contributing much to this equation so far, are we? Oh, yeah, our sin and our hopelessness and our debt and trespasses. That's our contribution to this equation. Chapter 4. What then shall we say that Abraham our father has found according to the flesh? If Abraham was justified by works, he would have something to boast about, but not before God. For what does the scripture say? Abraham believed God and it was accounted to him for righteousness. Okay, we're going to write that down. Accounted to him for righteousness. Now we hear these words. How do they fit in? Why did he pick these words? What do they mean? The word for accounted is logizomai. I cannot write it in English. I remember some Greek I learned. I took 2 years of Hebrew. I can write like one word in Hebrew. It just does not stick with you. Logizomai. Okay? And the word for righteous logizomai, accounted, dikaiosune, righteousness. Let's look at these words. Logizomai is a word in Greek literature that's used in legal and financial settings. It means to credit, to count, to reckon, to regard, to think, to impute. Okay? Let's just, since I use this word often, we're going to write to credit. Or Let's say to regard. Okay. The kaiosune, the verb form, that's a noun. The verb form, to justify. To declare righteous. So it says, Abraham believed God and it was accounted to him as righteousness. Was credited to his account as righteousness. He was regarded as righteous. Was he righteous?
No.
In his essence, is he righteous? In our essence, are we?
No.
The transaction is a one-way transaction. Do you remember when Abraham was going to ratify the covenant with God? Do you all remember what happened? They were supposed to walk through together. That's how you did it. If you made a deal with your neighbor, you walked through dead animal, cut in half, together. That was a solemn deal. God and him were going to do this together. God puts him asleep. God goes through it by himself. It's unilateral. Later, God says, I cannot deny myself, when he refers to the Abrahamic covenant. It is not God, if only they're good enough, I'm going to do my covenant. No, he says, I can't deny myself. God credits to your account. If somebody, if you were like about to go bankrupt and someone put a bunch of money in your bank account, that'd be good, right? Would you go around bragging? Look what I did. No, you didn't do it. God credits to your account. He regards your account as clean. The kaiosune. He credits to your account what? This. Right standing with God. That's what he puts in your account. Much better than money. Right standing with God. He declares you righteous. He justifies you. This word is used 9 times in Romans. This word is used 30 times. I think that's important. God credits to our account righteousness. What part did we do? Seriously. We believe that he did it. Okay? Did he say, all right, once you clean up your act and show me what you got, I'm going to save you? No, that isn't the way it went. He teaches total depravity, that word. Remember, adokimos? Fail the test. We all fail the test. So God says, okay, your account is in big trouble. If God's just going to read the account and it says our righteousness is like what? Filthy rags. Okay, and that's our righteousness. That's not even the bad stuff. We don't want to hear about that. So that's our state. God comes along and he credits to our account righteousness. That's the gospel. Anyone that tells you otherwise doesn't know what they're talking about, and they're trying to either get in your pocket or your head. I said it, and no one can win that argument with you if you get this. It's simply what the words mean. We contribute sin, we contribute debt in trespasses, and we contribute hopelessness. That's our contribution. But then you'll have people say, yeah, but I believe that. And because I believe that, no. You do believe it. God makes you believe it. He gives it to you. Faith is a gift. Grace is a gift. Faith is a gift. You can't get any credit. Jesus said in John 6, what? All that the Father has given to me will come to me. No one can come unto me unless the Father draws him. We won the lottery, guys. We got the best deal imaginable. That is good news. That's really good news. That ought to make you think twice about some of the neurotic things we like to think. You wouldn't believe the stuff people say to me. Somebody not too long ago was saying to me, you know, Jesus' real name is Yeshua. And we have to say his correct name because that's the name by which we're saved. Oh, yeah. And they're dead serious. Their Bible version says Yeshua each time. And I'm like, okay, go for it. You can believe that. And they said, don't you agree? I said, no. I said, the only thing that matters is that God has plucked you out of hell and he saved you graciously. That's what matters. And what's wrong with saying Jesus? You know, I said the same word means Joshua. The same word, the name in the Old Testament means salvation. Isaiah means salvation. So should we start calling him Isaiah? What about people that don't take Hebrew? Come on. Everybody's looking for their little corner that they can claim that they have a toehold on salvation because they're so insecure or wanting to differentiate themselves from other people. We don't have any good news about us except this. This is the good news. This is incredible. Incredible. If you got that, let everybody else get all worried about what they're going to get worried about. So since sin is our contribution, we have to recognize this and be on guard because it's just, we have to watch ourselves. We really have a tendency to go bad because it's our natural tendency, right? We love attention. We love approval. We like credit. We want credit. Well, you know, I've been going to that church for 50 years. When I first got to Lipscomb, I met this really nice guy, Daryl. He was a really good guy. I mean, salt of the earth kind of guy, you know, as much as anybody could be. And he was telling me about his grandmother from Mayfield, Kentucky. And he said, she's been a member of the church for 50 years. And then he kind of said under his breath, I hope she's saved. That really stuck with me. I'm like, wow. I mean, he was so proud. And then even he had to admit, well, so what? You know. So just to drive the point home, when you stand before God, what do you want to claim you got? Do you want to start giving God a list of things that you want to put on your account? Well, you know, I was a good father, and I didn't hardly commit adultery, hardly ever, especially, you know, as I got older, when I couldn't. What do you want on your account? This is what you want. This is what you want. You want the thing that's credited to your account. This. You don't want any of the junk. If they're going to start comparing your good works to other people, mm-mm. So we really have to be on guard. You have to admit, we got to see this problem readily. I see it in myself. I see it in everybody. Everybody. If you get to know anybody well enough, you see their human frailty. That's a nice word. How about their deadness apart from God? You just see it. Human pride, the scandal of the cross. We have to save face. I'll give an example. In my job, this hasn't happened in a while because I just don't bother. But this happened about 12 years ago. I worked on a unit called the Addiction Unit, okay? And this guy comes in and he is jonesing for drugs right from the minute he hits the unit. You know, and I said, well, you're not going to get anything tonight. The doctor said so. Well, and then he's like getting mad at me. And I said, well, the reason you feel that way is you're an addict. He was insulted. He complained to my boss. She said, did you call him an addict? I said, yes. I said, I did. Well, why would you do that? I said, what's the name of the unit? The Addiction Unit. So what are the qualifications for being admitted to our unit on the Addiction Unit? I mean, this is like English grammar. You are in the Addiction Unit. What are you? Now, if you want to argue, I don't belong in that unit, I'll listen. But if you say, yeah, I need to be on this unit, where are my drugs, me, 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 where are they? You know, this is all I deal with sometimes at work. My drugs. If you're on the Addiction Unit, you're an addict, but that insults people. It offends them. They don't mind saying I'm on the Addiction Unit because they're not a unit. They're a person. They're a very special person. Just ask them. This is all of us. I used to do this. I don't bother anymore. I used to have like a big chalkboard, dry erase board, and it was like a sliding thing. So I could get behind it and I could write things on the board. I would write things like, stupid, ugly, useless, all these awful words. They don't know what I'm writing. Then I say, now I want you all to tell me, be real honest, what words come to your mind when you think about yourself? Now, these people have been beat down, you know, and they've gone through a lot. And in their sane moment, they'll sit there and they'll tell me, stupid, ugly, and sad. It's very sad because a lot of that is messages they got as a kid. By the way, what we're teaching today is not licensed to mentally abuse people. You know, you got enough of your own problems that you don't need to be trying to subjugate people under you. But they'll write really uncomplimentary words. They'll say really uncomplimentary things. Stupid, ugly, useless, lazy, terrible words. And I'll say, you know, I knew you all were going to say that about yourself. And I'll flip the board around. And they're amazed. Like, that's a magic trick. They're amazed. But I say, and I always say to them, if I said to you when you came in, I'm going to tell you some things about yourself you're not going to like. You're stupid. You're ugly. They'd be ready to fight me. Right? You don't want to hear it from other people. You might can admit it to yourself. Human pride is so strange that even people that seem really lowly, I see them getting involved in this. Like, you ever heard somebody say, I don't believe God can forgive me? You ever heard that? I don't think God can forgive me. You don't know what I've done. First of all, it's okay to say, I have a lot of guilt about stuff I've done in my life. I feel like I've been such a mess. It's hard to imagine anybody could forgive me of this. I get that. But you almost find people bragging, like, you know, you don't know what I've done. So here we are, here's God, again, and underneath is us, and I'm so bad that I have a problem even God can't forgive. You're putting yourself on top of God. You're saying that the sacrifice that God made with his son is not really good enough. Now, I promise, if you tell these same people the real truth, what the Bible says about depravity, they'll get offended. But by human standards, they're not going to let anybody get underneath them. I've been the worst thing ever. Because then they'll start telling you some good things they've done. But you just don't know. You just don't know. And a lot of times, that's just because they really can't forgive themselves or whatever. But they don't realize what they're really doing. You diminish God when you do that. Like if you say, you know, I just can't feel forgiven. Okay, you can't feel it. But believe the facts. Okay, that's the facts. It's just hard for it to translate to me. That's okay to say. You diminish the sacrifice of Jesus' son. You diminish the hopelessness that you really brought to the table if you persist in not really, well, that's for other people, not for me, you know. No, it's even true for Hitler if God decided to have saved him. Even Hitler. And Wolfgang's not even here. Talk about human pride and chaos. Have you all watched TV preaching? I mean, it's a three-ring circus sometimes. Sometimes. And, you know, that's what the world sees, by the way. You wonder why sometimes we get people look at you kind of with a cross eye. Well, they're comparing you to what they're seeing on TV. I'm seeing a lot of attention-seeking, a lot of histrionic behavior. I see preachers competing for attention when there's a few of them on the same show. I see a lot of manipulative money grabbing. If you send in your first fruits, we'll bless you for the year. God won't bless you. That's just preying on people's insecurities and fears. I see a lot of false teaching up with people. I don't want to talk about sin and blood. Let's talk about how good we are. And if y'all keep coming and paying your tithes, my goodness, you're going to keep hearing this. So we got to be on guard about this. In Hebrews 12, it talks about the sin which so easily ensnares us. Let's talk to believers. You know, if I just walked in and said, you know, I've been watching you, and I think sin really easily gets you, you'd be ready to slap my face. But we got to be honest with ourselves. It does. Sin easily ensnares us. Apart from God's grace in us, we are posers at best. Got to understand that. So when you see one of us messing up, don't go, I knew he really, yeah, well, you should have known from the teaching here. What you ought to say is, oh, you know, when I do something stupid, I'll go, oh, there I go again, being me. People at work, when they're really flustered, they'll say, well, what if you're wrong? And they say it like that. What if you're just wrong? And what if you're not going to heaven? I go, well, then I'm going to get what I deserve. They hate that. So we need God. Here's a few verses. I'm not going to look at them, but I'm going to just give you the essence. 1 Timothy 1:12, 1 Corinthians 15, Ephesians 3, chapter 8. This is Paul saying things about himself. Really good role model for us. Christ came to save sinners, of which I am chief. I am the least of the apostles. I am less than the least of all saints. What are you going to say? What do you say? Why don't you just beat people to the punch and tell them what a sinner you've been and how undeserving you are of God's grace? And that's the whole nature of God's grace. He saves people like me. The last thing I want to do is look at Romans, and we are going to be done. Romans 12. Something for us to look at and kind of dwell on when we're going about our lives. Because I don't know about you, but it's really easy for me to look at people and go, what is wrong with them? I mean, remember when Paul, I cracked up when Jim said it. Jim was reading in Galatians 2 weeks ago. And he goes, you stupid Galatians, why are you so stupid? I mean, it is dumb. It's foolish. It's foolish to have the gospel and then try to pervert it or change it into something that's going to damn you. Romans chapter 12, we're going to read 9 to 18. And it's funny, the little title in my Bible above this says, Behave Like a Christian. Okay, verse 9. Let love be without hypocrisy. Abhor what is evil. Cling to what is good. Be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. In honor, giving preference to one another. Not lagging in diligence. Fervent in spirit. Serving the Lord. Rejoicing in hope, patient in tribulation, continuing steadfastly in prayer, distributing to the needs of the saints, given to hospitality. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not set your mind on high things, but associate with the humble. Do not be wise in your own opinion. Repay no one evil for evil. Have regard for good things in the sight of all men. If it is possible, as much as depends on you, live peaceably with all men. That's good advice. Let's pray. Father, we pray that you will be with us because we need you every moment of the day. Because if you're not on top of us, we're just going to start acting like ourselves, and that's not good. Lord, please help us with our individual concerns, the difficulties of our lives. Some folks here are going through a lot, and I pray your comfort over them, your peace, better than any psychiatric drug they could ever take. Father, thank you for the indescribable grace you've given us. You have people reserved for salvation that we would say, no way. But you decide and you save, you declare righteous. None of us deserve it. Please help us to understand that and to walk forward in Jesus' name. Amen.